This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for tuning in this morning. In the studio with me is a true pioneer in Over the Rhine, a fellow who has been in the Over the Rhine area working, establishing a business for over 25 years now, and is bringing a unique perspective as well as a unique business to the air here on Cincinnati Edition. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Kevin Pape, owner of Gray & Pape Incorporated, to Cincinnati Edition this morning. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning to you, Mark.
Well, Gray & Pape is a cultural resource management company,
right,
which I know really doesn't explain what exactly you do. Please explain what Gray & Pape actually does.
Be happy to. You know, it might be easiest to just say who we are. We're archaeologists, anthropologists, historians, architectural historians, and a group of support staff. And our clients hire us to help them work through a process when they have a construction project or whatever, to assess the effects of that project on historic properties. So we look at archaeological sites, we look at historic buildings, cultural landscapes, help them understand what's important, what the effects of the project might be on those properties, and work through solutions to mitigate adverse effects.
No, this is looking at the history that so often is buried, whether it's contained in a building itself or in the ground. A lot of folks, I know being an archaeologist, you have a full understanding, but a lot of folks don't understand how many layers there are underneath our feet,
right,
of history.
That's really true, and a good example of that, literally in our backyard, is Washington Park. Washington Park is really a multi-layered landscape that we see today as a celebrated park that's embraced by the community, but it started as a cemetery, actually two cemeteries around 1810. The two cemeteries were managed by Christ Church, which is still with us on 4th Street, and there's a Presbyterian section, and those the cemeteries existed until around 1850 or so. Then they became overcrowded. Spring Grove had opened a few years before that. And there was a move really by the city to shift the use of that property to a park even then. So by about 1860, there was an early design for that park. And then it was also used for the centennial celebration, sesquicentennial, the Columbia Exposition, and so forth, and a lot of very interesting things going on.
But they made it a park, but just put dirt on top of the graves, or did they move the bodies that were in the graves?
Both.
Both? A little of both.
A little of both. And we have seen this a number of times, working with the excavation or removal of historic cemeteries, that the historic record will say one thing, and it usually says that bodies were disinterred, removed, reinterred somewhere else. But then when you do the archaeology, when you come back and you look in the ground, you find that it's pretty often not the case. And that was true at Washington Park. There were quite a few individuals that had been removed, but for whatever reason, there were more that were still in the ground. Whether they lost track of families, didn't have the means to move their loved ones, whatever, we don't know.
But you looked at this when they were making the parking garage, dug up, were looking at all the artifacts that you found. And that's one type of project that Gray & Pape does. But
that's right.
I've also been reading about your Alaska Pipeline project, where you're looking at a 800-mile-long swath of Alaska that you're
right,
looking for. And this is not like downtown Cincinnati, Washington Park, where you know something might be. In Alaska, you're not really sure what is under the tundra.
That's right. You don't know. Alaska is an interesting situation where we saw an opportunity to provide service for the Alaska Pipeline Project. We identified a local partner up there, Northern Land Use Research, and we kind of combined forces, combined talents, got that contract and have been working on the archaeological survey of that corridor for a few years. And like with many things, that the expertise that you have as an archaeologist helps you to see and understand where sites are likely to occur. Hmm. You know, sites are really places where people lived, worked, and conducted activities, and they had reasons for being in a particular place. So if you kind of understand what those reasons were and what they were looking for when they decided to, you know, put down stakes and build a house or make a fire or something like that, it narrows down the landscape. But still, it's challenging in Alaska. A lot of the realities of working on the frontier come into play. You know, the crews go through what they call learn to return training. basically, wilderness survival includes everything from, you know, how to make a fire using the battery in your cell phone to how to exit a helicopter, you know, if it goes down. You know.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a very, very different setting.
Well, talking about finding a place to live and work and knowing people pick places for reasons, you picked Over the Rhine. And way back when, I was talking to you before the interview here and mentioned I've been, you know, sort of working in this neighborhood for a few decades and have seen a lot of change. And you were part of that change right in the beginning back in, 1986, 1987. How did you settle on Over the Rhine? And that was pretty much right out of college, too, right?
Shortly after, yes. And, you know, like many things, it was kind of a convergence of opportunities. I was working with Wes Cowan, who at the time was curator of archaeology at the Natural History Museum, the Museum Center. And he and a couple of partners had a building on Main Street, and they knew that I was looking for an office kind of to expand. I had been really working out of my house up to that point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we looked at the building, and I thought, this is where I want to be. I want to contribute to the Renaissance of Over the Rhine, and I'm a strong believer that historic preservation and economic development really do go hand in hand. So I wanted to be there and be part of that and help to demonstrate, you know, why it's important to be there. And it's not just about the historic buildings. It's about demonstrating how people can reuse those buildings, you know, rebuilding community.
And you put quite a bit of rebuilding into your building there at, 1318 Main Street, I think. Yeah. Beautiful building. It started out, what was it like when you first moved in there 25 years ago compared to today? Because I know you've done a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a funny story. I tell a lot of people that when we first walked through the building, I could stand on the third floor and literally see all the way down to the first floor.
And it wasn't an atrium, right?
No, it was not an atrium. It was in very rough shape. But, you know, it's a testament to the quality of the construction, the resilience of the design, that didn't take long to put it back in working order. And although, you know, in the early years, when we first started, there were maybe eight or nine of us, and we occupied the first floor. And as we expanded, and I've got about 32 people in that office now, we couldn't move upstairs because of zoning restrictions. So Wes and his partners owned the adjacent building on Woodward, and we occupied the first floor, and there was a common cistern between the two buildings in a courtyard, and they knocked a hole in the wall of the cistern on both sides, created a door, basically.
Wow.
So we walked down in the basement, go through the cistern, walk up the other side and, you know, into our other office.
Well, zoning has changed, and I know you have people on every floor of the building these days. And satellite offices as well. I was surprised to learn how much you've expanded over the 25 years, because you have some offices in far-flung places, including Rabbit Hash, Kentucky. How did you get Rabbit Hash, Kentucky in there?
Right. Well, everybody needs a conversation starter, right?
Right.
Rabbit Hash, we do a lot of work in the state of Kentucky, and so we wanted to have an office there and demonstrate our commitment. And we had been looking at an historic building in Covington that was kind of our first choice at the time. But the owner of that building was delayed on construction. And so we started looking at alternatives and found this place in Rabbit Hash. And my first reaction was, would that really work for us? And it's turned out that it has. It's quiet. In fact, people sometimes from the Cincinnati office will go down there to work, you know, if they need to concentrate and
get away from the hustle and bustle.
Exactly.
Well, as you've pioneered in Over the Rhine for the last 25 years, now going into 26, what has been the most satisfying about seeing the revitalization of the neighborhood? You know, you mentioned your work on Washington Park and that new jewel in the Queen City's crown there, and all the excitement and life that's really building in this formerly rundown neighborhood. What is most satisfying?
I'd have to say that reestablishing a community in what was once a very thriving neighborhood, that really is the most satisfying. As I said, the attraction to a lot of people is are the historic buildings, but to me, the historic buildings really are sort of a touchstone of the generations of commitment to this place. It's not easily translated, but you realize that these buildings have stood here for many generations, representing people who have worked, lived, played in the neighborhood, and then, it kind of fell silent for a while, and now new life is coming back and finding ways to recapture the soul of the community.
Kevin Pape, the owner of Gray and Pape Incorporated, the cultural resource management firm. It's been based in Over the Rhine on Main Street since 1987. 25 years, celebrated last year, now entering 26. You can find out more about Gray and Pape on our website, wvxu.org. Thanks again, Kevin, for coming in today.
Mark, you're welcome. Thank you.